This is low-tech.
Okay, I'm very low-tech, so that's a good fit. Okay, what I'm going to be talking about with you all today, spending just a little bit of time, and it's good that it comes to the end of the session because it's really the 360 that we developed, along with it being tailored specifically to this program, it also served the dual purpose of not only providing feedback to the fellows or to the new local health officials and to their coaches in terms of how they were doing both before training and after training, but also in terms of evaluation purposes. It also gave information to me that I could then convey to NACHO and Robert Wood Johnson Foundation about the impact of the training. So what I'm going to do is take you through. Let me back up for just a second. I'd like to acknowledge my colleagues, Seth Kaplan and Alicia Stokowski. They are at George Mason University, and they were instrumental in helping me develop this. Okay, so the learning objectives that we're going to be going through today are going to, I'm going to be reviewing the Survive and Thrive 360-degree performance evaluation process for the new local health officials and discuss how it was used in improving on-the-job behaviors of these new local health officials, as well as providing evidence of program impact across various communities and local health departments. As Ramon and Vana just described, we had this unique task of, this was a nationwide program, so when you're looking at impact, you have to create a measure not only that's tailored to those new local health officials and their unique position, but also that's standardized enough that you can, that it would be useful and valid across various communities and across the various configuration of the local health department. So tailored, but yet standardized nonetheless. And then what I want to do at the very end is just to provide to you some lesson learned and best practices and develop and implementing a tailored 360, just to give you some issues that you might want to think about in case that's something that you might want to do instead of using the more generic off-the-shelf versions. Okay, so what is a 360 process? How many of you all are familiar with what a 360 process is? 360 feedback? Oh, okay, several of you. In essence, the idea of a 360, you know, when we think of traditional feedback to people about how they're doing on their job, we think of a typical, the supervisor rates you and relays that information back to you. One of the, and it's created so much buzz in private industry, but also I'm seeing it used more and more in other organizations as well, is the idea of a 360. And what that means is you take a target, such as the new local health official, and you get ratings of them, not only their self-report ratings, but ratings from all individuals that they're working with in their organization. So it's that idea of you're getting a 360-degree view of how the person is performing on the job. So it gives you multiple perspectives. It allows for more accurate and thorough feedback because you're not only getting your own assessment of how you're doing or your direct supervisor's assessment, but you're also getting the assessment of your direct reports, of your peers, of your community partners. And when you're looking at development programs for top executives such as Survive and Thrive, those, in a real sense, those are also recipients of the training because your leadership and managerial skills are going to be brought back with you on the job, and those individuals are going to also be recipients of the training in part. It also allows for greater self-awareness. You might think you know your own strengths and weaknesses, but you don't always know how others are perceiving your strengths and weaknesses. So it allows you to get that information, to take a look at not only your self-reported ratings, but also how others view you. And then, as Vana says, it allows you to have discussions with your coaches about those gaps, maybe those aha moments or surprises. And then in that way, it allows for greater self-development, professional growth and development in terms of really capitalizing on your strengths, really working on your areas for improvement. One thing we know about 360s is, they're most effective, two things. One, in having a facilitated feedback session with a coach. But the second critical element for them is that they remain action-oriented. Not just you're getting your, you know, feedback and you go, oh, that's interesting, but that you get that feedback and then work to develop some sort of action plan so that you take that feedback and create, in the case of Survive and Thrive, they created learning contracts where they created developmental tasks they were then going to do over the course of the year But in essence, what you want to do is take that information and link it to your on-the-job performance so that there then is that translation of what you're learning in Survive and Thrive and how you're going to use that information to benefit your local health department and the community in which you work. Okay. So the objectives for our 360 were really twofold. One, it was to provide information for the professional growth and development of the new local health officials in the training program. But secondly, it provided some information for demonstrating program impact. A lot of times when you look at managerial or leadership training programs, they tend to use the off-the-shelf measures, and they're standardized. They're very good, but they tend to be very expensive and very lengthy. They're also typically not targeted toward one position in an organization. And so we had the unique opportunity to create an instrument that was shorter, more concise, more cost-effective, that was targeted toward this one population, which was the new local health officials, so that we could make these greater inferences with respect to when we saw changes in the work environment, these behaviors were linked directly to the training, so we could make some assessments about what was the impact of that training over the one-year time frame. So what steps did we follow? Well, one thing that we did was, of course, we're going to use multiple raters because it's a 360, but one thing we allowed them to do was identify who those raters were themselves. Sometimes in 360s, the organizations will identify who's going to serve as raters for you. But we felt like, particularly because this was a developmental 360, we wanted them to be comfortable with the feedback and comfortable that they were choosing individuals that knew them and knew their work well. So we asked them, we gave them guidelines, you need to identify a supervisor, you need to identify some peers, you need to identify some direct reports, but they chose those individuals. Now be clear that if you're going to choose different types of people, both inside and perhaps outside of your organizations, like a community partner or someone from the Board of Health, they may not know every aspect of your performance, and we wouldn't expect that. So we told them, it's okay to choose individuals that are thoroughly familiar with one aspect of your performance, and then for the rest of the survey, they can just mark that box, not sure, and it doesn't work against you. It just allows you to pick people that know you well, even if it's only in certain behavioral categories. So we had them rate the fellows on behavioral statements and the critical competencies of the Survive and Thrive, and then we summarized this information in a feedback report. We did two things, too. We not only did ratings, we also did qualitative information. We found this important, one, to give the ratings some meaning, but also to allow people to give very directive responses on what their behaviors were like in the organization. And it's critical, if you're going to do this, that you keep the questions very specific. And the three questions we asked them, and this has been used many times in industry, is the idea of what should the new local health officials start doing, what should they stop doing, and what should they continue to do. Now, what happens when you ask the question in that way is that it targets behaviors, and it targets behaviors that they can start doing, stop doing, or continue to do. And it also lets them identify those behaviors so they can see where are what they're targeting to do in terms of these action plans aligning with what their organization thinks they should be doing or their local Board of Health thinks they should be doing. Again, the reports are provided in a one-on-one. I generate the reports, I send them straight to the coaches. The coaches then give the reports to the fellows and have their facilitated feedback session. The local health departments do not own the data. The data goes directly to the new local health officials, although some of them may share that information with the people with whom they work, and that's fine, but it is their information, and that's very critical in terms of how you present the feedback to them. Okay, so it was typically an online questionnaire, though I want to be candid. Some people were having trouble filling out an online questionnaire, and they'd call me and they'd say, I have a firewall or I have a computer access issue, and I mailed out a few, but mostly it was online. We did it pre-training and post-training. Many top executive programs only do it pre-training. We felt it was very important to do it post-training. I've also had some fellows give interest that they would like to see 1 year out post-training in the next year, how they do after the training. Again, it's the self-report, the new local health officials themselves, typically their immediate supervisors, direct reports, peers, and others. We had a variety of size of local health departments, so there was variance in how many filled out the reports, varying from like 8 to 22, but essentially they were coming out of those categories. And again, they were rating their performance on training-related behaviors and competencies. The behaviors were identified by our advisory work group and vetted amongst local health officials and pilot tested to create a measure of 41 behaviors, and I'll show you an example of them in just a second. And then also that qualitative information on what should they start doing, stop doing, and continue to do. And some sample items are here. Produces services that meets the standards of internal and external partners. These give you some examples, and they were categorized under specific categories. Again, the competencies, if you look at the Survive and Thrive competencies, some are more managerial, some are more leadership-oriented, and the categories of behavior, you could tell from the categories, some lended themselves more to managerial behaviors and some more to leadership-type behaviors. Okay, one thing that I want to mention too that's also unique to the 360 that we developed, when you think about, this is a fairly well-known in the training literature schema by Baldwin and Ford, but this is essentially showing what happens when you're looking at transfer of training or transfer of training beyond that learning environment back to the workplace. And what you see is it's a combination of the characteristics of the training program. They're very careful to follow the principles of adult learning, and they keep their objectives very targeted toward their target audience. But also those characteristics that those new LHOs possess. Are they ready for the training? Are they motivated? And those interact to create what you get in terms of learning outcome, those knowledge, skills, and abilities. But when you talk about, as you get more and more distal to the training event, and when you start talking about on-the-job performance, some noise comes into play. And one of the things we know from the training literature that's very important is what's going on in terms of organizational support. So what we also did, and there's two things, really support and barriers, that can either facilitate the training or interfere with the training. So what we did was, I've done research on this, and we were able to develop an online questionnaire. It went out the same in the same survey that went with the 360. And again, it was done pre-training and post-training. And we had them rate the situations and actions that indicate organizational support for the performance of the competencies and behaviors. And what this allows you to do is, if at the end of the day you're getting some behaviors that appear to be not improving as much as you would hope for, it allows you to see what is going on. Is it an organizational level factor, or is it something in fact with your training? It just helps you kind of tease that apart a little better. And this gives you some sample items from that organizational factor survey. I've also used this with emergency preparedness training as well. Okay, so here's what we see. So I wanted to show you a slide of what we found with respect to Survive and Thrive with the 360. This again is the performance behaviors. You can see it goes from 1 to 41 because they rated them on 41 on the job behaviors. And what you see here is the fellows training or self-reported self-reported performance of those behaviors on the job. The yellow line, I know this looks a little bit like the Dow Jones, I'm sorry, but I was trying to show you sort of in a general view what we found. The yellow line is that time one mean, that's the pre-training. This is how they rated themselves prior to the training. Again, from 1 to 7, 1 is they never engage in that behavior, and 7 is always. And they rated themselves fairly high. You'll see in a minute their other raters rated them more highly initially. But what we did see was the results certainly are trending toward improvements in those behaviors. And what we found was there's approximately 20 behaviors that are significant at the 0.05 level. And there's another probably, I think it's either 6 or 7 that are at about 0.09. But you have to remember this is a very small sample size. We're talking about a sample size of 19. So what you see is with Survive and Thrive, some very impressive results with respect to the transfer of training and on-the-job performance pre to post. What was even more impressive to me was, this is the other raters. This is across fellows, so this is across the local health departments. But the other raters, as you notice, pre-training started out quite high. And one of the things, when I brought the pre-training results back to the work group, they said, wow, you think they're like in a honeymoon phase or something? These guys, they're new and they're on the job, and we're seeing the fellows are really the hot shots in their departments. And what we're gonna see after training is a drop. Once they get on the job and they have these barriers and they're not able to do all the things they can do. And I said, you know what, I really don't know. I don't think so, but I'm not sure. Well, what we found was post-training, they actually did improve. Again, they're trending in the right direction. They're not as significant in this case, again, because it's somewhat truncated because the initial scores are so high. But again, it gives you a graphical depiction of how strong this training was in terms of transferring back on the job for the local health departments. And again, this is a mixture of leadership and managerial behavior. So what you're seeing here, to some extent, the ones that improved more highly were likely ones that were on their action or their learning contracts, their action plans, and also some of them more leadership in nature, more visionary in nature. We will likely see greater improvement again in a year on certain of those items, because some leadership skills are difficult to attain in a one-year time frame. But certainly, again, very impressive results. Excuse me. Okay, but the one thing that I want to stress here, aside from, you know, that shows you, I think, in terms of being able to demonstrate impact, both to NACHO, to the funders, to the coaches, to the fellows, I think you see very dramatic results. But one thing I want you to also recognize is the fact that we're also very interested in not just looking at those 360 results, but also looking at those 360 results in tandem with their learning contracts or their action plans. The idea here is, once they get their second set of 360 results, which we've sent to the coaches, and as Vanna said, they're going to be giving them feedback within the next couple of weeks, is they're going to be reviewing those action plans, looking at what they've done over the last year, what they would like to do based on their new results, and creating new action plans for the next year out. That's very important in terms of trying to demonstrate impact for two reasons. One is, it's giving them that sense of lifelong learning, that those 360s aren't a static event, that a training process isn't a static event, that they can use that information and continue in their professional growth and development. But secondly, in terms, for my purposes, in terms of trying to demonstrate impact, we can also identify those items, or those items on the learning contract, that were difficult to achieve in 1 year, but nonetheless, I can track over time and look at impact for the next, you know, 5 to 10 years out, to demonstrate, again, these are very clearly linked to the competencies, to demonstrate the impact of Survive and Thrive to what's going on at the local level. I'm sorry, I'll send a voice in my voice. Now, we were able to demonstrate training impact. That's one piece of the puzzle. I was also very interested in getting some evidence of, was this useful for them, okay? And what I found was, and there's some on the back, it's not a table.
It's actually outside the room.
Okay. NACHO did an article in their last NACHO exchange on the 360 and gathered some statements from the fellows about how they felt about the 360. And this gives you an idea of, at least from an anecdotal point of view, that they're telling us it was a very positive experience for them, and it was beneficial for them in terms of in making improvements on the job, and also in terms of being able to translate the what they're learning in the training program into some type of difference in terms of what they're doing on the job. They would be doing those behaviors anyway, because in the learning contract we tell them to target behaviors they would already be doing or that are needed, but it allows them that extra additional resource of a coach, of the information of Survive and Thrive, of that information of the 360, to be able to achieve those behaviors and to be able to achieve those action items much more efficiently. And as Ramon shared in that graph with Daly and Watkins, I believe it was, that critical time period, those first couple of years, are crucial in terms of not making mistakes. Okay, so what did we learn? Well, there's a few things we learned. One that's really important is being very specific of the purpose of the 360. It's not a 360 in the sense of performance appraisal. It's a 360 that's targeted at specific critical success factors we know for new local health officials that are associated with these training programs. And we were very clear with the coaches, with the fellows, with all the raters of what this exactly was and what it wasn't. Okay, that it was for their personal development, that they selected their own raters, that the ratings were anonymous and kept confidential. That really helps in terms of the types of feedback they're getting and their receptiveness to that feedback. And again, the evaluation should include job-related observable behaviors. I could not have possibly done this without the help of NACHO and their advisory group, because I started with the literature and what I knew were critical managerial and leadership behaviors for in general, and then they helped me make it very targeted and concrete toward new local health officials. And you, it has to, if for the 360 to really have the kind of impact we saw, it really has to be that specific and tailored to the training. And again, we looked at organizational and contextual factors that should be considered. I'm giving a talk about this with my colleague Seth Kaplan later on this week at AEA. So if you want more information about that, I can give you more information. We're sharing at the American Evaluation Association. We're talking about that in more depth. The other thing is, we know, you know, 360s, we know factors that make them successful, and one of them is having a facilitated feedback session with coaches. I think in terms of survive and thrive, coach is really a misnomer because the coaches play such an instrumental role in terms of being a mentor as well and really giving them advice and creating that idea of lifelong learning for them. But I think in terms of the 360, it was absolutely critical that they were able to have those kinds of discussions without any fear of repercussion about what their results were and what they should do with them. Again, that makes it much easier to link to the professional growth of the local health officials in their local health department. And also the idea of the evaluation should be repeated. Oftentimes we do see these developmental 360s as somewhat static, where they see them at the beginning of a training program and then nothing thereafter. I think the idea of repeating these to monitor progress and modify those action plans really drives home that idea of lifelong learning, but also helps us in terms of evaluators be able to make statements with respect to cost benefit, return on investment, looking at incremental gains over time. So the idea of repeating these evaluations is critical to both those objectives, both of professional development and also in terms of demonstrating impact. Okay, I probably went too fast, I'm sorry.
Now we have some time for the questions.
I have a question about the 360. When I went through the National Leadership Program, almost uniformly among the 50 or so participants, we rated ourselves lower than our raters. And I wonder, is there any interaction effect between saying the raters say I'm better than I thought I was, maybe I'm better than I thought I was, so I'll score myself better next time.
You know, what we typically find, and our results are similar to what you find, is the type of individuals that tend to go through these programs tend to be the type of individuals who have recognized they have that need for that program. So initially, they do tend to rate themselves lower. And so that's why we sort of saw that gap, and I would be guessing, you know, that's probably similar to your case. I think in the case of, do they rate themselves more highly afterwards because they see someone who gave them a value opinion, I would have to agree with that. And also their interaction with their coaches, I'm sure, gives them a lot of self-confidence as well of the idea of instilling in them that they can do this. I think as they start seeing those gains across the program year, that does certainly interact with that and affect their ratings, you know, post-training in terms of what they can do and can't do.
I can speak a little bit to that because I've got three of my four. I have their initial one and now I have their second one. And yes, they did rate themselves significantly higher on some of them, but I think their first ratings were really low on some of them. But also what I saw was them become more confident as the year went on. We became more peers than actual coach or mentor towards the end of the year. It was more like...
The other thing is when you think about what are they really doing, when you look at these ratings theoretically, it's really self-efficacy ratings. I'm confident that I can do something. If you have to liken it to something, it's really self-efficacy. And what we know about self-efficacy ratings is as you, particularly behavioral self-efficacy, as you perform something more and more, you get a better idea of what your real self-efficacy is. So in the beginning, I would say they probably were, and you probably were too, a lot better than you thought you were, and then as you become more familiar with the task, what we typically see is the gaps start shrinking a little bit. You know, again, I think this cohort was such a high high-achieving cohort and was so, in terms of people get motivation and readiness, so incredibly motivated that I think that's why those other raters scores too were so high. But I do think over time what we find is you do become a much better judge of what you can and can't do in training. So those pre-training scores tend to be a little bit on the conservative side of what reality is, if that makes sense.
I guess my disclosure statement is that I do serve on the work group for Survive and Thrive, and am a classmate of Vana from HLN year 11. So that's my disclosure statement. The question is that in terms of the context and the organizational support, I'm just wondering, as you look into your crystal ball, and I'm thinking about the ripple effects of the economic crunch that most locals and states are feeling counties. I'm wondering, do you see there being some sort of bias in sort of the assessments? If you imagine that local health officials are being tasked with doing more with less, and I'm wondering if that compromises the capacity that organizations have to support local health officers, especially the incoming local health officers. So instead of just getting a laundry list of, all right, glad you're here, here are 10 things, now it's, hey, glad you're here, here are 100 things.
You know, it's such an interesting idea that you bring up, because one of the things when I was giving the first set of ratings back to the work group, I said was, if ever there was a time where a training was needed for new local health officials, I mean, no way could anyone have predicted it was needed, you know, this past year with the financial crisis and with H1N1. The interesting thing that we found, Claude, and we don't know why this occurred, although I have some ideas, and I've been given some ideas why it might have occurred. Just as you saw those ratings increase for the performance, when we had them rate how supportive their organizational environment was, those also significantly increased over time, both from the fellow's perspective and from the other raters' perspective, in many cases significantly. So I was expecting that we would see a decrease because they have had so many challenges. And some of the feedback that I have gotten is public health in general, when times are very challenging, are probably at the local level the most capable of saying, this is the challenge at hand and this is what we're doing. And so they may not view that as other folks might have in terms of but it's an interesting factor. And we know when we look at the correlations, some of those org support factors were definitely significantly impacting those performance ratings. So that's a critical question to me that we're trying to now slice and dice the data and make a little bit of sense of. Why are we seeing such a positive effect in terms of organizational support during a time when there were so many budget cuts and so many crises occurring? And that, I don't know I have the answer to that yet. And then I have some conjectures that people have shared with me, but I'm not sure I know the answer to that yet. But you know, someone said to me, well, isn't that even show an impact that the training has such a positive effect because you are seeing more positively viewed local health departments? And I said, you could say that. I'm not sure that's what's going on, but you could look at it in that light as well. That this training perhaps, they were able to create more positive environments as a result of this training.
SPAMP was organizational support, just financial?
No.
Okay.
It was time, it was how much they were trained, it's budgetary, it's certainly, anytime you look at organizational support, budgetary and time come up as pretty much the top two across any kind of organization.
I just wanted to point out that for some of the others in the room, because you know, organizational support, financial, just one piece of it.
It's very true.
Just a comment, that this morning I sat in on a session that was sponsored by the APHA Innovations Program or Project, and I'm just thinking that this, to me, and this is my bias, but I think this is an incredible program to sort of tout, not only through APHA, but other circles. So at some point in upcoming conferences, to think about co-sponsoring with that other group, because I know that in the morning session, there were similar questions that were asked in terms of competencies in a global sense, but also the application of these instruments in different pockets of the public health workforce. So, just a suggestion.
Yeah, that's great.
application.
Thank you. Maybe about 12 years ago, I'm from the state of Florida, and there were several new health officers who ran into trouble with their county commissions and lost their jobs because of it.
You're seeing one up here.
From Florida or somewhere else?
Minnesota.
Minnesota, okay.
So.
I worked with the state affiliate, FACHO, to create a mentoring program that did a number of things. Not only linked the new health officers up with specialists, say the best epidemiologist at the county level or the best HR person or the best budget person, but also sort of savvy political, especially around the county, who knew the local conditions. Know about that board, know this person, know that. So you got to watch out. This is how you approach those. So, I'm wondering how that critical local flavor, or does it ever enter into the survive and thrive?
I'll speak from the coaching perspective. Like I said, my goal as a coach wasn't necessarily to give them the answers. It was more to walk through, you know, some of the questions and try and come at it from that county perspective. And trust me, the reason I asked the question about support was mine was not financial, it was very political. but if in Minnesota, and like I said, one of mine was from Minnesota, we received a huge influx of money for childhood obesity prevention. I mean, massive amounts. And believe it or not, in this time of fiscal problems, the county commissioners in Minnesota decided that they didn't want to do this. And it was kind of across, I mean, counties that had been doing health promotion for years were having a hard time selling it. Now all of a sudden it sold to them. But it was really a hard push, and so one of the things I walked through with mine, she called me and said, what am I going to do? And I said, well, you go in with, this is what you like and this is why, but I said, in your back pocket, you have this other option, and if you, I said, you're gonna have to feel it out in the room. If it's going really badly, you know, pull this other one out, and they'll probably go for it. And the option was, she wanted an employee. When you have $400,000, you think you can have an employee. Well, so yes. But they were of the mindset that if this money goes away, they didn't want to have to be dealing with the employee. And so it was, you know, suggest that maybe you'll contract for that then, you know, was my suggestion. I said, you try and find three options. And she and I walked through. She got her employee. I ended up with a contract. Now, I've been there too.
So those questions, I think they do come up with the local politics, but like Bon said, our coaches were across the country, and they just give that their perspective and try to ask the right questions or some tips such as
how to get to. Those of us that, you know, have been around for a long time, and all of the coaches had been around for a long time, we knew of people in other states, so we could kind of say, you know, you might want to call so-and-so. She might know something about your county board or your city council. Because, politics is incredible at times. And the one thing I always had to remind myself is the only qualification for county commissioners is that they know how to get elected. There is no other qualification. So I've had everything from farmers to insurance people to, over my years, to policemen. I guess the most recent one was retired policeman.
So. Any further, any other questions?
I promise this is my question.
All right.
Do you connect with the state affiliate on this? Is there any coordination?
Like the state shows? We did, for that first pilot year, we did recruitment and asked for their help to share that opportunity. But we only were able to train 30 people. But this next year, as you may have heard, that we're trying to share the opportunity for states to implement this program at a state level. We're considering it as a pilot and working with the state shows as possibly a source to provide this training. So we've talked about it with the NHO affiliates, share that opportunity, and hopefully we'll see how that works. And we don't know how it would work, but at least for that first year, we kind of recruited from them. And we did have, like Florida, we had some great applicants and over 5 people apply. But for our pilot, we only accepted 2 of them, even though all of them were qualified and great applicants. We wanted to pilot across the country and stuff like that. So we'll see how the next years are piloting at the state and sustainability of this program, because we know that Barbara Johnson's not going to fund it forever.
Thank you to all of the speakers for